Join WEAA Sunday, June 14th at Phase 10 Restaurant and Lounge for a special Second Sunday Gospel Brunch featuring a live performance by Fruition. The show begins at 1:30 p.m. and is hosted by Gospel Grace's own Ernestine Jones. Reservations and information available online at phase10.com. Gilchrist Grief Services will sponsor a special health event focusing on self-care after the death of a loved one. Speakers will include specialists in meditation, nutrition, and exercise. Self-care resources will be provided on Saturday, June 6th, from 9 a.m. until 12 noon at the Gilchrist Hospice Care Office, 11313 McCormick Road in Hunt Valley. Pre-registration is required. For more information, 443-849-8251.
Public Radio, 88.9 FM, the broadcast service of Morgan State University, WEAA, Baltimore.
Support for WEAA is provided by Kubota. More information available at your Kubota dealer.
At 1101, it's 60 degrees here in Baltimore. Good morning, I'm Ashley Banks with your news update. In national news, the National Transportation Safety Board is still not sure if an Amtrak engineer was using his cell phone when his train derailed in Philadelphia last month. The board released its preliminary report on the crash Tuesday. The NTSB says it's also not sure if the damage to the train's windshield was caused by the accident or a flying object. And Boston police say the man shot and killed by law enforcement officers was being tracked as part of a terror investigation.
Our officers were involved in a surveillance of a known suspect wanted for some terrorist-related information that we had received.
Police Commissioner William Evans said Usmar Rahim was under surveillance by the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. Evans says an FBI agent and Boston police officer shot Rahim when he refused to drop the military-style knife. The officers confronted the man in the parking lot of a CVS store. The shooting is under investigation. And California officials are trying once again to create a solution that would allow the state to resume executing inmates. In court papers filed on Monday in Sacramento, prison officials proposed using a single drug cocktail to carry out executions in the state. No inmate has been put to death since 2006, when a federal judge found problems with California's three-drug lethal injection. And in local news, Baltimore City Police Commissioner Anthony Batts is proposing safety upgrades for police transport vans. Following the police custody death of Freddie Gray, the commissioner plans to install new partitions inside the vans along with the doors and cameras. The cameras can be monitored by the driver and will also record footage. Batts says he would like to replace the city's current vans, but the cost has not been fully discussed. And authorities are investigating a fire that broke out at Democratic Congressman Elijah Cummings' West Baltimore home. The blaze broke out at around 10:30 yesterday morning in the three-story row house in the 2000 block of Madison Avenue. No one was injured, and Cummings was in Washington at the time of the fire. And the American Civil Liberties Union is asking a judge to force the state of Maryland to make improvements at the Baltimore Detention Center. In a motion filed in federal court, the group calls the city jail a dank and dangerous place and claims that many inmates do not get proper medical care. The ACLU and Public Justice Center say the state has failed to comply with a federal court mandate to keep the facility clean and safe. And former NBA star Dennis Rodman says he'd go on a date with Caitlyn Jenner.
Now, life has its evil way of screwing with people. But now, since people's minds are so open today, man, you know what, bro? Bruce, knock yourself out, brother. If you want to go out on a date with me, let me know.
He tells TMZ Hollywood Sports that Caitlyn, formerly known as Bruce Jenner, should call him if she's interested. Rodman also took to Twitter to say he has nothing but love for the 65-year-old Olympic gold medalist. And that's the news for this hour. I'm Ashley Banks. Now back to Mark Steiner.
88.9 FM reminds you that the views expressed on WEAA programs are those of participants and not necessarily those of Morgan State University, the staff, management, or underwriters of Baltimore's home for cool jazz. WEAA 88.9 FM.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union.
Respect, Aretha Franklin, hit number one this day in 1967. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we are going to tackle what's been going on in Washington, D.C. around NSA. The president signed the bill that was passed by Congress, and there are many issues to talk about around that. We are joined here by Sue Udry, who is Executive Director of Defending Dissent Foundation, Acting Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and Colleen Stimson, who joins us, who is a manager of the National Security Law Program and Senior Legal Fellow at the Catherine Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy and the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at Heritage Foundation. Welcome, Sue and Colleen. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Colleen, I got to start with Sue and ask a question about the FBI planes, but I could also ask you, why does the Heritage Foundation have these long titles for everything? It takes half the program.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that the two donors who endowed that name are very proud, I'm sure, of having that name.
I'm sure they are. I'm just teasing.
It's pretty darn long. I'm a short guy, so I don't need a long title.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages, but do join in, 410-319-8888. Sue, let me just begin with you, because I know that this is something you've been on top of, which is the news that broke about the FBI surveillance planes that were also used during the Baltimore uprising here. Tell us what this is about.
Well, I guess we're still finding out what it's about, but the FBI has been flying surveillance airplanes. They're being very reticent about what equipment is on the airplanes, but it does seem pretty obvious, it does seem that they are using cameras on the airplanes. Whether or not they're using their Stingray devices to intercept cell phone calls is unknown, but they're doing this in secret. They're doing it without court warrants. And so that's what's really troubling. It's a secret program that just got outed, and they're not using court supervision to surveil Americans.
And this is brought about because the AP broke a story, right?
Well, you know,
is that where it came from?
The story. The first time that I heard about the story was in the context of the Baltimore uprising, and there was a fella in Baltimore who just seems to be interested in airplanes, and so he noticed an airplane flying overhead and tracked it down and discovered that it was an FBI airplane. And the Washington Post actually carried the story, I think, about a month ago.
Okay.
When we followed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the question is, what are they surveilling? One thing I read about was that they could be kind of using this technology that allows you to get information and data from cell phones, and all this is being done without a court order, as you mentioned a moment ago.
Exactly, and it looks like they've been very secretive about their use of the Stingrays and the cell phone capture technology, and they've actually forced local police in a couple of situations that we know of to drop criminal charges against people rather than let the use of the technology come to light in court. So it's pretty amazing to me. You know, why is the FBI using technology, and why are local police using technology that they want to keep so secret that they're going to basically undercut their own criminal investigations or their own getting a conviction. They're stepping away from getting convictions against people who they know are criminals because they want to save this technology.
Right, and we were talking about that here in a few weeks back about the FBI-sponsored programs in Baltimore, other cities that actually tap into telephones from a tower that they will not divulge, talk about how it works, and not use warrants and not be able to testify in court. I know it's all fairly frightening, and kind of the whole scheme of when we look at surveillance and where it's going and this kind of a period of fear of terror we're in and what that allows to happen.
Exactly. Not only the surveillance, but the secrecy around it is so undemocratic. You know, that's not what this country is about. You know, we don't want to let criminals run crazy across our country, but there is a constitution, and there's a reason why we have the constitution, and there's a reason why we don't accept secret law in our country.
And speaking of secret law, let's go into what is going on with NSA here, and we can, folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Many of you were part of those demonstrations taking place in Baltimore in the wake of the death of Freddie Gray at the hands of the police, and you have said things about those airplanes, and please join us. We can keep that part of the conversation alive at 410-319-8888. But it was announced this morning that President Obama signed this new bill that was supposed to rein in aspects of the government's data collection authority and crack open the workings of the National Security Agency's secret court, the FISA court, that allows it to take place. So what just happened here? And Cully, let me just start with this. I mean, I read the pieces you were writing. I want to hear your thoughts on this. One of the things I thought about immediately was this whole push to reform the National Security Agency and the secret court system that allows them to do whatever they do, and the probing into that. You know, none of this would have happened without Snowden or some of the others that we that are now being pursued by the U.S. government as whistleblowers. If this hadn't come to light, we may not be talking about this.
I think that you're right in the sense that Edward Snowden, even though he broke the law and disclosed classified information, did not use the appropriate whistleblower avenue that he had in front of him. He did spark a national and international debate and discussion about what is the appropriate level of lawful surveillance when our country is at war with non-state actors, al-Qaeda, the Afghan Taliban, and ISIS and associated forces. By the way, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court is not the NSA's court. It was actually created in 78 as a result of government overreach, the Church Committee hearings, et cetera. It's not a secret court. It's a well-known court. It's actually here in Washington. It's comprised of federal judges appointed by the Chief Justice. Their opinions heretofore, for the most part, have been secret because they deal with matters that usually classified. But this USA Freedom Act, which passed and the president signed, as you mentioned, does end the government's bulk collection of telephone metadata. In 6 months' time, it'll transition and just reside in the phone companies, which is where it always is anyway. And it does some other meaningful reforms, and so we can go into that. But I do think that, you know, whether you think Edward Snowden's a traitor or a criminal or a hero, setting that aside, he definitely, by disclosing this, started this national debate and discussion.
So, Sue, give me your start with your analysis of what you think happened just happened in Washington. You can include that question I asked as well if you'd like, but give us your analysis of what you saw happen in D.C. with the passing of this new legislation.
Yeah, it's kind of a cup half full, cup half empty sort of conversation for civil libertarians. As a lot of people have been saying, it's, you know, the first time that we've actually passed legislation that that reins in the NSA or intelligence agencies writ large in 30 years. So that's a great achievement for civil libertarians, and I would chalk it up to not only the members of Congress who were willing to step up and throw a wrench in the gears, but to mass mobilization of people across the country on a excitingly a transpartisan basis, just as it's been both the Republicans and Democrats in Congress, you know, fall on either side of this issue. But around the country, lefties and libertarians have been working together to try to rein in the NSA. It's just one program that the bill really addresses. And there's a lot of surveillance left intact, a lot of surveillance we don't even know about. And unfortunately, Congress is refusing to really step up to their oversight duties and take a full accounting of what U.S. intelligence agencies are doing here in this country, sweeping up information about innocent Americans, people they don't even suspect of anything. So that's really what we want, is Congress to not stop here, but to figure out what's going on, to understand what's going on, and to address unconstitutional surveillance that they'll find.
Cully, how do you respond to that?
Well, I have a different take than Susan, who I haven't had the pleasure of meeting yet. First off, it's not the first meaningful reform to the intelligence community in 30 years. In fact, in 2008, the Congress debated, the country slept, not many people paid attention, but they then passed the FISA Amendments Act of 2008. There were meaningful reforms there. Hawks on the right complained that it was restraining the agency. Folks on the left said it didn't go far enough. So we've had numerous debates and several changes to many of the tools that the NSA and others have used since 9/11, the biggest being the FISA Amendments Act, and then this is the biggest by far. So I think Sue is absolutely right. This is a watershed change since these particular tools were being used since 9/11. But it is important to remember this. The FISA court itself was created so that you didn't have unrestrained powers in the legislative, or more importantly, the executive branch, and that the third branch of government, i.e. the courts, did play a role. That is still in place, and in fact, I think made stronger with the USA Freedom Act. Not only is it requiring the court opinions from the FISC, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, to be published, unless there's an extreme national security reason not to. It puts advocates, independent lawyers in front of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to make novel legal arguments. Right now, it's just ex parte, in other words, just a government lawyer and the judge. And so I think, in general, you want to have tools that are lawful and constitutional that we've been using in the criminal context to be able to be used in the counterterrorism and national security context with proper oversight. And I think that's what the USA Freedom Act was trying to get at.
Sue, from your perspective, where do you think this new legislation has not gone far enough?
Well, I absolutely agree that I think it's very important the changes that the bill has included to the FISA court. Adding a little bit of transparency there is essential and important, and I would like to see it go a little bit farther. But I'll give you that it is a great advancement, and the fact that there will be an advocate arguing against the government in some cases at the FISA court, I think that's really important. For me, another part of the bill that kind of goes a little ways that's good is increased transparency and having the NSA, the executive branch, report the number of times that they're using these powers. Unfortunately, they're not going to be able to report how many Americans are being impacted, how many Americans' data is being collected under Section 215, but also the bill explicitly exempts the FBI from these reporting requirements. And to me, that's probably the key problem with the bill. I think the Department of Justice Inspector General just put out a report 2 weeks ago regarding the FBI's use of Section 215 and revealed that the FBI for 7 years didn't follow the requirements in the law regarding the minimization, or really the deletion, of records of Americans that they had no reason to suspect of any wrongdoing. So that's my key problem with this bill is really that the FBI is exempted from the transparency requirements, because I'm concerned about the FBI.
Because
they've shown time and again that they abuse their powers, and particularly as we found out in the 1970s when COINTELPRO was exposed, that the FBI has kind of a penchant for spying on people who are protesting the government or who are fighting government policies. And while in the 70s Congress did instill reforms to the FBI and require more oversight, and people were fired up for a year or two about FBI spying on activists. Over the years, the FBI has, they reformed for a while, and over the years they've kind of gone back into their same old bad ways of infiltrating activist groups and harassing them without any suspicion of them actually breaking the law. So that's what bothers me about the FBI. We could do a whole show about it some other time, Mark.
We can definitely do that, but we can definitely do that. So, Kali, I mean, one of the things you've been writing about is, I think, you, at least from my, unless I'm misinterpreting what you've been writing, is that is saying that we are facing a war in the world, and we have to have the kind of secrecy to make this thing work. Am I right or wrong?
Mostly right, Mark. Appreciate the fact you're reading my stuff. guess you're the guy reading it. That's good. what I'm saying, in all seriousness, is not that Cully thinks we're at war, but that two presidents, vastly different than each other, both say that we're in a state of armed conflict, which we are, against non-state actors who are certainly intent on causing harm to Americans and our allies. We've seen what they've done to Christians and other non-believers or devout Islamists overseas. And that we need to use lawful tools that are constitutional, and I think Susan obviously agrees with that. So I think what Susan was alluding to here was the FBI's use of national security letters, which I wrote about at Heritage back in March of 2008 in a piece called National Security Letters, Three Important Facts. What has happened since that piece I wrote is that the IG, the Inspector General for the Department of Justice, has done several follow-on investigations about how the FBI has been implementing the use of national security letters, and they found some small number of abuses. It's not as widespread as people would think. But the USA Freedom Act actually ends the bulk collection of data through the use of national security letters, and I think that's an important reform. I mean, the thing about a constitutional democracy constitutional republic that we're in is that we do have oversight by the House and the Senate. We do have the ability to have radio shows such as yours and others who can talk about these things openly. That's a strength, not a weakness. And so, look, this is not going to end the debate. I bet people will propose amendments to the USA Freedom Act if it doesn't start working the way they want it to after 6 months or a year or two. We do need these tools, not in secret, which is not the point I was trying to make in my writings, but in the most transparent way possible, understanding that there is a need for some things to remain classified because we're at war.
So let me go to the phones to get a quick thought and then come right back to Sue. 410-319-8888. Sarah in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, I need to push back on the gentleman that just spoke.
Yeah, Sarah, could you turn on your radio just for a sec so we can hear you?
1 second.
There you go. Thank you.
Back on the gentleman that you have that just spoke. Now, what I've noticed now in the country over the past few years is an anti-Islamic mood, and he's perpetuating by the words he just said about the Christians being slaughtered and everything. Before the United States came in that part of the world, the Christians, the Muslims, they all lived in peace, existed in peace, okay? Before that even, the Chinese and everybody else traded with the Africans, and there was peace, okay? Now, you're talking about Islamic and how he sees it, trying to conquer the world. And I want to ask you, what war have you ever gone in without your Christian cause first, which is the missionaries, directly after that, coming to guns, okay?
Sarah, thanks so much for the call. I think that we've covered that history before, and we have to continue to cover that history because it's as complex as you lay it out to be. Sue, you can comment on that, but also just comment on what this whole battleground in America, when you saw play out in Congress with Mitch McConnell, Bonner, and President Obama, on one page and many congressmen and senators on another, which is an interesting political alignment that took place around this. But I'd like you to comment also on what Khalid was just saying in terms of the needs America has for security, but our needs for civil liberties.
Absolutely, and I don't think that there's a contradiction between the two. I think that, and I agree, built into the Constitution and built into our system of government is this idea of checks and balances, and the Congress is supposed to oversee the executive branch. I think that they tend to be they tend not to take their job seriously. I think when abuses are revealed, Congress is much more apt to say, "Oh, this is an anomaly. This doesn't happen too often." But what I feel that they really need to do is sit down and have a full assessment of the different surveillance powers that are being used, because so many of them are being used in secret, and their stories are coming out. The Drug Enforcement Administration has been scanning people's license plates all over the country and amassing a huge database of where and when Americans are traveling, even though they're under no suspicion. And the same thing, the DEA has also been collecting phone records of Americans for apparently decades that we didn't know about. I don't know whether Congress knew about it, but that's obviously unconstitutional. And if Congress knew about it, they were derelict in their duties to hold the DEA accountable and stop that program. And if they didn't know about it, then it's apparent that they're really not taking their oversight responsibilities seriously. And as far as the, I guess the expansion of Islamophobia in our country, I can't really speak to foreign wars and the situation in the Middle East, but I do know that unfortunately Islamophobia is a thing, and people need to watch out for it. And I would check Khalid on his language on that, because I do know that in the Middle East, Muslims who don't believe the way that these people who claim that they're Muslim, ISIS and such, Muslims are being killed as well as Christians. So religion's such a tricky thing, and I think that it does behoove us to be careful about our language, because there are people who are trying to stir up a lot of Islamophobia in our country, and I think it's really unfortunate.
And Khalid, we literally have less than a minute left in this segment. If you want to have a quick closing thought here.
Yeah, I agree with Susan that taking a 360-degree view of all the things the government is surveilling across various departments at the federal and state level would be a good idea. Secondly, my point about what ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and associated forces are doing is obviously they're killing lots of Muslims. And I have Muslim friends. I've served in the military, third-generation Navy officer. But we are in a state of war. And so we need lawful constitutional tools to ultimately detect, degrade, and then defeat the enemy. Anything less is undignified and not worthy of being the greatest country in the world. So I think that we need to be clear-eyed about how we go about this.
Well, I want to thank you both. We've had Khalid Simpson, who is from the Heritage Foundation, Sue Udry from – is it Udry, not Udry, right? Udry, right?
Well, it's Udry, but, Udry. It doesn't really matter.
I got it now from now on.
Just don't call me late to dinner.
I won't do that. Sue Udry, who is from the Defending Dissent Foundation, thank you both so much for joining us here today. We look forward to having you both back very soon.
Thanks for having
me. Take care. Bye-bye. We're going to take a very quick break and come right back as we look with the folks of Baltimore Neighborhood Inc. and Housing in Baltimore. We're going out with Moving On Up, Curtis Mayfield, who was born on this day in 1942. Though you may be-